It wasn't a surprise that big cities were strongholds for Democrats this election. Joe Biden won all of the 20 largest cities in the United States. And while that may seem like a good thing, Derek Thompson writes that Democrats' reliance on the biggest cities to deliver votes is creating problems for the party. Derek is a staff writer at The Atlantic and has a new piece out on this tomorrow called Why Big City Dominance is a Problem for Democrats. He joins us now from Washington, as he does each Monday. Derek, welcome back.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Yes. So can you tell us more about how important cities and densities have really become for Democrats from an electoral standpoint?
Democrats win cities, period. They just win big cities, they win the biggest cities, and they win the suburbs of the biggest cities. That is their coalition. It is a handshake between density, that is the largest downtown areas, and diplomas, the highest educated suburbs of those metros. If you go online and you type into the search bar, largest U.S. cities by population, and you scroll down the list, New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Houston, Phoenix, you have to scroll all the way to number 25, Oklahoma City, before you get to a metro that Joe Biden didn't win in November. Democrats are just without question the party of the city today, and that's often reflected as a wonderful thing about their future because cities and metros are growing. But I really think it's not necessarily a good thing. It's creating a lot of subtle problems in the party.
Well, more specifically, you write that Democrats' metro coalition is a nightmare for winning national elections, which has to do with the Electoral College and the Senate. Lay out some numbers for us that show us why that's true.
Sure. Well, we hear about Democrats' problems in Electoral College all the time. I don't have to go into that. The real problem, honestly, is the Senate. The Senate, as everybody knows, privileges smaller states. That's just how it was designed. And it is a fact. It's a quirk of modernity that most of the small states today have rural populations with lots of white people without a college degree. And that's the sweet spot for the Republican Party. The GOP currently holds both Senate seats in Alaska, Arkansas, Idaho, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Nebraska, South Dakota, and Wyoming. Those 11 states have 22 senators who collectively represent fewer people than the population of California. So that's a Democrats' problem right there in a nutshell. Yes, Democrats can win the Senate. They have won the Senate, but it requires them to win big in multiple elections in a row. Just look to 2 years ago in the 2018 midterms, Democrats lost the national popular vote in the Senate contest. They won the national popular vote by 18 million, but they lost two net Senate seats to the Republicans. It's just a terrible, terrible map for Democrats to win in the Senate going forward.
Well, you also point to progressives living in the wealthiest cities from San Francisco to New York City who have created a philosophy that does not go over well in other parts of the country. You actually call it Instagram socialism. Can you explain that?
Yeah, I'm going to get in trouble for this one. But here's what I'm saying. There's no question that young college-educated people in America's richest cities are really progressive. I have before called them effectively a third party in America to the left of the Democratic Party. They're also extremely online. And there is something about the dynamics of online interaction that tends to push conversations toward their extreme. And this has created, I think, an urban political movement in this country that is just very far to the left of the average American. Americans love ideas like universal health care, if you poll them. But overall, they aren't that fond of socialism. And so a problem for the Democratic Party is that their young base in cities, extremely educated, extremely online, this movement of what I call Instagram socialism does have a way of branding popular ideas like universal health care with unpopular ideas like socialism. And we have to get to a point, Democrats have to get to a point where they are thinking more about the marginal voter for their party and not just about the base.
Well, you give California as an example of this vast canyon between liberal progressives in cities and everywhere else. The LA Times actually reported a lot of what you're saying here on that divide and how it shows up in voting patterns on a number of ballot measures like rent control and criminal justice. But what does California tell us about the viability of progressivism right now nationwide?
It tells us that cities are far to the left of the regions around them. In the last 10 years, Los Angeles and the Bay Area have moved far to the left of the rest of California. The Los Angeles Times published an analysis of California ballot measures that found that LA and the Bay Area of San Francisco were 30 points to the left of other Californians on issues like affirmative action and allowing parolees to vote. Now, a 30-point gap is a massive gap. That's like the difference between the state of Massachusetts in the presidential election and a purple state like Pennsylvania. So from a political perspective, it's just a straightforward fact that Los Angeles and the Bay Area are beginning to look like leftist havens in an otherwise moderate state. And that is a microcosm of, I think, what we're seeing nationwide, is that metros are growing in population, but their downtown areas, in particular their young population within those downtown areas, has just moved significantly to the left of the average American, and it's creating a really difficult tension within a Democratic Party that's a riotous coalition between AOC-type voters who represent New York City and people in the suburbs of Georgia and Arizona.
Derek Thompson is staff writer at The Atlantic. As always, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.